Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. What do you get when you combine guitarist-singer Danny Cooch Korchmar, Milwaukee's Leland Sklar on bass, guitarist-vocalist Waddy Wachtel, drummer Russ Kunkel, and guitarist Steve Postel? You got it. One of the greatest group of session musicians ever assembled. They're called the Immediate Family. They are the subjects of Denny Tedesco's latest documentary, Immediate Family. These stellar musicians laid the foundation for 1970s hits by stars like Carole King, James Taylor, Linda Ronstadt, and David Crosby. As Denny says about the Immediate Family, these are guys in their mid-70s recording and playing and loving it like they were in their 20s. Beta's resident musicologist, Steve Gotcher, sat down with Denny Tedesco to learn more about the Immediate Family documentary.
Well, my first doc, which was about the Wrecking Crew, is the story of the session players of the 60s, which was my father, Tommy Tedesco, was a guitar player. And Dad was passing away then, and that film took 19 years to make, from 96 to about 2015. So when something like that, the next opportunity came about, it was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. This next group of session musicians were my era, in a sense. I grew up in the 70s. So the difference is also, I knew their names, because in the 70s, we had album covers. We had liner notes. We could read these names, and they were odd names. So I knew who they were. They were legends in my head.
Right. I know what you mean, because I grew up in that era as well. And as opposed to the Wrecking Crew time, when you didn't know who the band was at all, liner notes made it possible for me to know who the bass player was, who the drummer was, who the guitar player was. And if I liked what the guitar player was doing on this record, yeah, I might like what the guitar player is doing on this other record that I'm looking at that has his name on it. And so the whole thing sort of evolved.
Yeah. And in the 60s, it was a different thing also, because they were also hiding the musicians. They didn't want people knowing that the Beach Boys were being recorded by these other guys called the Wrecking Crew, or in the same group that was on the Association or the Fifth Dimension.
But the Wrecking Crew didn't go out on tour with these bands, so there were other players who went on tour, so nobody knew who the bands were at all.
Yeah, and the reason was because the sessions, the studio playing at the time, you only had one or two tracks at the early days. So you had to go in, you only had 3 hours to record something. So you had to have session musicians who were just killer. Go in, knock it out, move to the next session. You had 3 hours to do three songs. That's what you were allowed to do. Glenn Campbell was part of that. Leon Russ was part of that. 70s rolled around, you had more tracks. You had, the business is changing. You're not just doing a single now, you're doing an album. You're keeping these guys all the way through the project. You're taking your time recording an album, maybe a month, maybe two. Where in the Wrecking Crew, you knocked out an album in a day.
And the members of Immediate Family had their names mentioned in the liner notes. Yeah. So they were known entities. Do you think that had any kind of an impact on their career?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, look at the first albums of Russ Kunkel. He's got Tapestry, Carole King's Tapestry.
And it's too late, baby, now it's too late.
James Taylor's Sweet Baby James.
I've seen fire and I've seen rain.
And then Joni Mitchell's Blue.
Oh, Carrie, get out your cane.
Put on some seals.
I mean, can you imagine having that on your credits? You could quit that day.
One of the coolest things in the movie is right at the beginning, the film's opening credits, with the various artists' names on the leaves and the names of the members of Immediate Family on the roots of the plant. It's a brilliant idea. It really sets up what the film's going to be about. Who came up with that idea?
I like to say I did. I did. And it's one of my prouder moments. I mean, I got a lot of bad ideas too. But it was like trying to figure out what is it that they connect with. And I thought, how am I going to do this? Because, and I thought, well, the family, and then it was like the family tree. It's like, ooh, okay, that'll work. And the other thing is, I used to produce Time Life, you know, those CD commercials. You remember when you watch those things, you get sucked into it. because you hear the music and you've seen all these titles go across or up and down, and all of a sudden one's lit up with a color. You know, so that's what we did with the tree, is put a flower, a lit flower. So, oh, it's Jackson Browne. Okay.
The film's flow is relatively seamless. It first talks about the members of the band as individuals, then it brings them together, and then it shows them branching out and working with other musicians, and then coming back together again as immediate family. Was that the format that you had in mind, or did the film's flow evolve as you put it together?
It's pretty much what we had at the beginning. I knew, because I had done it once already, I knew kind of what we were dealing with. I knew we had to capture the five guys. And I knew I wanted to always start each story with one of their hits, introduce them with one of their hits by playing a song to them in headphones, and let the audience just hear the bass line or just hear the drum hits or the guitar riff and wonder what's he playing? You know, I want the audience to start thinking about music differently. So they only hear maybe 15, 20 seconds of that, the drums, the boom, 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 boom. And then we slowly fade that into Fire and Rain. And that was a trick I did from the first film.
Now, you did such a great job of showing the different personalities of all the members of the band. Yet when they gathered together around the table talking, they appeared so at ease with each other.
Yeah.
What was it like listening to their stories about their musical adventures?
I only knew musicians hanging out. I only knew them sitting by a card table, gambling, or at dinner, or at parties, and they riffed it. You know, they have a rhythm of teasing each other and laughing and joking. And do you remember the film, Woody Allen film, Broadway Danny Rose?
Yeah.
There's a scene where all the managers are sitting around talking about Broadway Danny Rose, and they're just razzing about this guy. He's not even there, but they're all talking about him. And that's exactly how I grew up. So that's why I put him at a round table, so I can hear them speak. That's what I love.
Wad was out on the road with Stevie and
making real money.
Yeah, and didn't come in until it was 3 days. We recorded the thing in 3 days. Wad came in on the last day.
And it took, you know, like 15 minutes, and then
we were playing. It sounded like us. Well,
yeah. Our fingers were bleeding and things were hurting, but we kind of got right back on the saddle.
It just evolved into what it is. We all love each other, and you know, we were having so much fun playing.
Yeah, and it seemed like they were so at ease with each other that it didn't seem like it was very difficult to get them to open up.
No, because it's funny, because I want to be, it's always being like a voyeur. I don't want to ask the question. Yeah, you're doing interviews, you have to ask, and you kind of, you know, you'd rather have conversation. And, you know, and you get four cameras, you let them fly. You know, I'll throw a question out there to start, and then they go, you know, and we come to an end, and then we start throwing another question out there. But they basically do it on their own.
Here's a question that I'm going to ask that you probably haven't been asked yet, and probably for good reason, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If you were to give the guys in the band names of one of the seven dwarves, who would it be? You got Doc, Grumpy, Happy, Sleepy, Bashful, Sneezy, and Dopey.
Oh, God. That's hilarious. Oh, boy. Well, I can tell you who... I could tell you... Danny would be Grumpy.
How do you do what?
Bashful would be Rust.
Oh, gosh.
Doc would be Steve Pistel, the new guy.
Why, yeah. That's true.
Happy is Tully Leland.
Happy, ma'am. That's me.
Sleepy would be Waddy, because supposedly he never comes out of his room when he's on the road. He stays in it. It's very dark, and he never sees sunlight. That's what I've been told.
Hard to get.
It's a good one. And you were right. No one's ever asked that before.
Well, then, I'm really glad I asked it. I just hope that the guys agree with your assessment of who they are in the pecking order of the seven dwarves. One of the most fascinating things for me was how the players had no desire to be the star. They liked being in the background, serving as the foundation of the music. How much did their devotion to being the backbone of the music influence the final product that they came up with?
all of them have this weird, like, insecurity or reluctancy to be the guy, you know. And it's funny because James Taylor, there's that moment where they said James started the band, the Flying Machine, and Danny said, "Why don't you just call it the James Taylor Group?" He said, "No. He didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to stick his neck out that far." And same thing with Carole King. She, you know, it was James and Danny that encouraged her to go solo. To, you know, she was just the sideman for James' group. She's just playing piano. They encouraged her, "Why don't you sing, you know, up on the roof?" But she did it. And then all of a sudden, you know, then she's doing her other album. Then Tapestry comes along.
I admire players that work together and riff up each other. And I imagine that's very challenging, but also ultimately rewarding.
I think there's nothing better than having love from your peers and respect from your peers. And I can only say that from a son of a musician. There was never anything better than my father being his proudest moments at work when he's doing an orchestra and he's got huge solos all the way through a film. And the string players stand up and give him a standing ovation. It's one thing if an audience, we think, oh, they're great, they're great. But having your peers understand what you just did is way better. And that's why the great line from Keith Richards talking about Waddy.
I mean, the thing is, when guys working together, the wonder of it is when you're looking at each other as the take ends, you know, and you're going, hey. You give that dopey look on your face, and you go, yeah. And Waddy and I are kind of like that, yeah, you know.
Musicians have a language.
Right. They can anticipate what somebody's about to do, and they can also react to something that's already been done while they're playing.
Or and encourage you. And that's the other thing. What's missing today is music. I'm not talking about it's the crafting of the music. Is the problem is now, if you don't have everybody in the same room, you can't encourage each other to go left or right. You can't have mistakes. Because if the drummer's laid the track down, then the bass player comes, he lays his track down. Everybody's got to follow suit. So if the drummer wanted to push the bass player or the bass player or vice versa into a different direction, you can't do that. It's already been laid down.
This film seems to be a story about people who have really learned to work with each other, to collaborate with each other. Is this what you thought you were going to find out when you started working on this film?
Yeah, I did. I did because the idea where the premise of the immediate family came from, it was when they had this band, you know, that was the thing that hooked me. It was like, all right, they got this band called Immediate Family. Why do they call it Immediate Family? And the reason was Danny and Leland and Russ were part of a group in the 70s called The Section. And there was a Japanese guy that wanted them to come over to Japan, and he wanted to put The Section on concert tour. And Danny said, "No, that's not what I do anymore." He goes, I'll bring my friends. And he says, "But let's call it, I don't want to call it The Section, let's call it Immediate Family." He goes, "Because all of my friends that I'm bringing, that's what we are, we're brothers."
Is there any one particular scene in the film that really captures the essence of the movie for you?
Ooh, there's so many of them, but the humor. It's funny because Waddy's he doesn't know he's the funny guy, because he is very funny and you laugh when he does things. You know, there's those moments like Waddy goes in to do Steve Perry's album and they're just doing a rhythm track and he goes, okay. And they said, thanks, that's it.
What do you mean, thanks? Wait a minute, what? What do you mean? What are you talking about? What about the section? What about the solo section? And Nico goes, no, he's going to like put a saxophone there. I went, no, he's not. He goes, what? I said, he's not putting a saxophone there. I said, play the tape. I know what should go there.
You know, it's like that cracks me up. You know, they hear it in their head and they just go for it.
Now, I think the song Skin in the Game, which is featured at near the end of the film.
Yeah.
It's a song that really depicts why these guys have such rewarding careers in music and how they've become such great players. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I said to them, I said, can we think about a song to maybe think about something, you know, that we can play, you know, throughout the film maybe, possibly. And that's what they came up with.
It's about sticking it out. It's about giving your
it's funny, it says a lot about us. I remember, I'll give you an example. The first time I asked this in the other film, I asked Bones Howe, the great producer slash engineer, I said, well, what's it like when you're at the top of the world? You are, you know, they're coming from all over the world to work with you. And then you're not. You know, your career is not as busy as it was. And I'm always asking this because I know what it's like from a son's perspective and how my father dealt with it. And he said, you have your ramp up, you're at the top, and then you ramp down. And he says, it's not about staying at the top. It's taking the ramp down as long as possible. And I think skin in the game is always being a part of something. It's really about being relevant in something. You know, you want to be relevant in your job. You want to be respected. You want to be asked questions. Hey, what do you think? You know, I think we want to have skin in the game.
Danny Tedesco, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Thanks for creating such a wonderful film.
Thanks, Stephen. I appreciate it. Take care. You gotta have skin
in the game. Danny Tedesco is the producer of the documentary Immediate Family. He spoke with Steve Gotcher. Find out more about Immediate Family at WPR.org/beta.
The more I watched it, the more it came across as a good film, and I could no longer continue to deny that, and so in the book I defend it.
Coming up, film critic Catherine Coldiron joins us to analyze junk movies, including Deathbed, The Bed That Eats. Good luck taking a nap today. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.